So the second holiday season is upon us. We've gotten through the first one, which is Halloween, of course, and now we got to get through
Halloween, Christmas. Then you got the Turkey Day with all of the... Thanksgiving was weird this year.
Yeah, it was.
It was kind of a little Twilight Zone Halloween.
Thanksgiving.
Well, I mean, the news reports, like, the coming apocalypse. It's like, stay at home and cook a turkey for yourself. It's like, who does that? So, but... So how you been, man?
Not too bad, man. Staying busy. You know, enjoyed the... Noah and his sister were off for a while, so we got to spend some time with them during the break. Just been getting ready to end the year up, man. Even they said the year is going by so fast.
It's the fastest and the slowest year ever.
Yeah. It's moved fast, but absolutely nothing has been accomplished.
It's already December, but it's also only December. It's very strange. But, and then for the last, you know, we're going to talk about this more on our show next week, but for the last year, because of all of the weirdness, like, our schedule's been completely wonky because the convention got postponed and then canceled, and all of the normal players that we normally see, we haven't been able to see, and it's just been, it's been a weird year for everybody.
Yeah,
so this is our kind of New Year's resolution to get Scary Dead back on the rails, get the convention rebooked, get our networking muscles flexed, because we were doing pretty good there for a while, and then 2020 hit
chaos
us. It hit the atom bomb, just blew all that away. So,
but we refuse to be a casualty to coronavirus.
That's right.
We're going to be a phoenix that's going to rise from it bigger and better than ever.
Okay, dude, so I got to tell you this story. So, like, I'm reading this book right now, and it is called We Sold Our Souls by the author Grady Hendrix. And Grady Hendrix, for the most part, he's kind of listed as like a horror comedy writer. Although this book, there's nothing funny about it. There's no comedy part that I've seen. But it's the way it plays out, it's kind of like a mystery, right? So you've got this character, and they're a band. She's the main character. She's in a band. She's the lead guitar player and songwriter. And so 20 years ago, they were an up-and-coming metal band. And then at some point, they broke up, and the singer from the band went and became the most famous rock star in the world. And she's working at a hotel. Like life did not go her way.
Yeah.
But then she starts getting these kind of strange feelings and premonitions or whatever, and she goes and visits the other guitar player, and he ends up killing himself right in front of her. And then, like, all hell breaks loose. And so it kind of plays itself out as, like, a mystery almost. It's like a mystery suspense, almost like a action-adventure sort of thing. Not scary, but very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Until this last little bit. And she goes down, she's hiding from people that are chasing her, and she crawls down in a well, and then she realizes she's trapped, and then she sees this tube in the bottom of the well and crawls into it and makes her escape. But for like 12 pages, she is trapped, like, underground in this pipe.
Wow.
And you have to remember to, like, take a breath, because it's like pressing down. She has, like, turn her head, and it's like she's scraping by, like, pushing with her toe and, like, one fingertip, and can't breathe. And you're just like... So that's what I'm, like, kind of seeing December as like, crawling through the end of this.
Trying to get to the end, yeah.
just breathe. If you can make it on the other end of December, like, alive and, you know, relatively in one piece, then you're kind of ahead of the game.
Right.
So, there's all the listeners out there, man. Just take a deep breath, power through. We got 30 days left. Less now since we're recording this.
I hope we see some light at the end of the tunnel, man. At the same time, I'm preparing myself for the worst.
Always. Always.
You know, ever since the kids got back to school from Thanksgiving break, every day it's two more cases at the school. It just keeps multiplying. You know, it gets to the point where if it's, I think it's the Fort Bend County, I think has set it at, if 15% of the school contracts it, then it's back to at-home learning, which it's, that was so pointless. Everyone I have talked to, you know, from therapists to teachers to students to parents, virtual learning is impossible. And it has put so many kids behind from where they should be right now. And honestly, I've talked to some people about the way school is structured now. Now, you don't have any kids that have multiple classes a day, but the way they've done it now is with my daughter in high school, instead of 6 1-hour classes a day or 55 minutes, whatever it was, it is now 4 1.5-hour classes every day. And one of the things I learned back when I used to teach different all-field subjects when I was at SME back in the old days, if you go over an hour teaching adult males, at that point, they're looking at their watches, they're looking at their phones, they're looking at email, because their attention span goes to shit.
Mm-hmm.
So I made it a rule, a break every hour.
Of course.
For 10 minutes to get them back on track. Could you imagine high schoolers having to sit there? That last 30 minutes, they're not learning anything. And what's bad is everything they learned the previous hour, they're not retaining, because that last half hour, their minds are wandering off to somewhere else.
There's that. And then there's also the... There's so much on the learning side of stuff, on the teaching side of stuff too. You think, because, you know, I'm trying to teach my kids certain things because, you know, so like basic math, like a multiplication, adding fractions, you know, it's like you've got that filter of the screen between you and your audience. And you're like, okay, well, here's how you add fractions, you know. So, you know, 1/2 + 1/2, and you're explaining how, you know, it's like, it's 2/2 and not 2/4. Like, when do you add numerators? When do you add denominators? Mm-hmm. When do you flip and multiply reciprocals? And, like, all those different fractions rules. That's hard enough when you've got kids that are sitting there listening to you, and you can have them practice on the board, and you can walk over and see what they're doing wrong on their paper. It's damn near impossible to teach that. And so, like, all of this poor kids in these, like, open mind grades, you know, in that elementary school where it's, like, the basic of basics are just...
They're falling behind.
Yeah, it sucks. So, and we're very involved, you know. Like, I work with my kids. I read them stuff and, like, and I just imagine these poor kids whose parents work all the time, like... Not saying, like, oh, they're unfortunate that their parents work, but the parents who can't, like, be there to answer questions for them. I'm fortunate. I'm unemployed right now, so I can be here to help answer questions. Those poor kids that don't have that, oh, my God.
You can imagine. It's just, it's sad. So hopefully they continue with in-school instruction, and I'm ready for it to get just back to normal, man. My daughter is, too. She agrees with me. There's... The way it's structured right now, it's just not beneficial to their learning.
Yeah. Well, that's a problem, too, with whenever you have a state bureaucracy structure, because they have to have so many hours, like, online, because that's the equivalent of a butt in a chair. And it's just like, dude, like, every company in the world has flexed, you know, to make it work. Y'all can, too, you know, but... That's a whole other conversation. So, what are we talking about today? This is the Scary Dad Podcast. We, again, apologize for any kind of weirdness, but we're just going to call it 2020 and roll on, on with the show. It is December the 9th today. It is Wednesday, December 9th. My bad. I wrote it down backwards. And, we are in episode 161, and we're going to talk about some of our favorite horror anthologies. So, hang out, stay tuned. It's going to be fun. But first,
the old business.
All right, we're still playing with the format on the old business because, again, we lapped ourselves. So every time we change a day, every time we try to do something, the old business is one that happened in one of our earlier episodes. We've covered all of history in the Scary Dad Podcast. It's bizarre. But we're going to go. So anyway, just went poking around the net and found this is kind of fun. Because normally, when would you think horror movies are released?
October normally.
October, summer blockbusters. Yeah. September, October, and that lead up to Halloween and stuff. Well, a lot of really famous movies have come out in December. Mm-hmm. So these are the top grossing December releases in horror. So in order of box office, accounting for inflation. So number 10, 2005's Wolf Creek. Remember that one?
Yes, I do. It wasn't a bad movie. It was a pretty good movie. I think there was a sequel called Return to Wolf Creek or something. I've never seen that one, but the original one was good. I enjoyed it.
This one, 1941's The Wolfman. Number 9. That's
classic Universal monster, of course.
Yeah. Number 8, 2007's The Orphanage. It's one I've never seen, but it's in the top 10 of horror releases in December. And you see we're going back to 1941.
Right.
So, like, it's... 1998's The Faculty.
I remember that one well.
That was a good one?
It's a good concept.
1973's The Exorcist. In at number
six. Kind of a big deal.
Yeah. Number 5, Scream 2 from 1997.
And what do you think of the new sequel they're going to be putting out? Have you been paying attention to the...
I know they're coming out with one. I have... Like, I kind of... Like, did they go to Scream 4?
Yeah.
I never saw Part 4. Part 2 was all right. Part 3, I didn't like.
Yeah, normally, would sequels just start, you know, ruining a franchise. I hate to say that.
But, yeah.
Especially when they try to, you know, there's a difference between having a sequel where you change format and go from possibly, you know, a serious movie to a more campy movie just to try to freshen it up. But when you do sequels trying to, in effect, get the same magic the first one had, they tend to go to shit pretty quick.
Yeah. And Scream's one of those where it's like all the major main characters are dead. So, like, you can't be like, it's a reunion sort of thing. Like, let's get the old band back together. Because I think they actually eventually killed Jamie Kennedy, too, didn't they?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think he died in part 3.
Yeah, he did.
So, because he lost his virginity and then he died. Like, that was the inside joke for him.
I love Jamie Kennedy so much, man. I'm missing him on TV.
Well, hey, number 4 was Scream from 1996. So, edging out part 2. Part 3, Hellraiser 2. I wouldn't think releasing a Hellraiser movie in December would be a big, big
draw.
Yeah. Apparently. And number 2 is Christine from 1983.
I love that. I rewatched it again a couple weeks ago.
It is awesome.
I just love that movie so much.
It's so weird going back and reading reviews on things that are classics. So, like, The Thing. I was like, oh, this movie sucks. You know, John Carpenter movies. I mean, Escape from New York got great reviews, but then The Thing and Christine got crappy ones. It's like, but The Thing is probably one of the best horror movies ever made.
Yeah, you know, we both discussed that. We both agree with that.
And then Christine, I mean, dude, a haunted car. But, I mean, there's some of those scenes in that movie are just... I mean, they're just so cool. Like, right. With with Christine chasing that dude, like, crushing herself in order to get him. I mean, brutal.
And it's a movie that holds up really well because at the time, Christine was a classic car anyway. So it's still a classic car. So, you know, it holds up well. It's not like watching episodes of Knight Rider and they had a brand new car for that time. And you're supposed to still think it's a brand new car, but it's a really... Have you watched Knight Rider lately?
The old ones?
No, yeah, the old ones. Have you? It's so funny because you go and watch it and, you know, think about Firebirds. You know, that Firebird was badass at the time, but it didn't have, like, ground effects. It looked like shit. You know, it looked like just an odd car. For now, from what you saw, you know, that particular car, how it transitioned over time, became more sleek and more aerodynamic, and it's funny to watch it now because it looks like it was a cheap car. It doesn't. If you look at it now, knowing what Firebirds ended up looking like of that same type of body style, and you think to yourself, why'd they buy the base model?
Right. They're gonna load it up full of computers. And I think who was the voice? The voice was of Kit.
Damn it, I'm trying to remember his name.
Wasn't it Mr. Feeny?
Yeah.
From Boy Meets World?
Yeah, yeah, sure was.
But no, interesting thing about Christine, too, because it was not a classic car. That was what was so crazy about it, was it was not a popular model of, you know, and it was not highly sought after, and it didn't really hold its value with collectors. So it even says in the book that Arnie was having a hard time finding parts because the 1958 Fury, there was a production run of them, but there was maintenance parts, but it wasn't like collectability stuff. That whenever they made the movie, they bought all of the good condition ones available in California and wherever they could get them from, and destroyed most of them. So now it actually is a collectible car, but it's actually really, really rare.
Right.
Because to make the movie,
they bought the whole lot of them.
They bought them all up
and set them on fire.
Which is, I think that's badass. Yeah. And the number one horror movie released in December, which, I mean, it makes sense, but at the same time, kind of surprising over some of these other ones, was Black Christmas.
Awesome. Great movie. Kills me that they made a remake, which I honestly, I really, really want to do an episode on. Well, we've done one on bad remakes, but I want to do an episode on remakes that you didn't realize were remakes. And the reason I say that is, you know, with the Black Christmas that came out, 2 years ago, mm-hmm. I think it was? It was shit. I actually saw it in the movies. It was terrible. But you end up, what happens is when you have remakes like that far apart, you end up having a generation of people that think that's the original one.
Yeah.
And there's so many movies that's an example of, you know, people like you and I that, you know, appreciate movies and research them and everything else, we know that The Thing was a remake. But there's a whole bunch of people that don't realize there was one made before.
Yeah.
Little Shop of Horrors is another one. There's a ton of movies like that, and I'd love to discuss that one day. Just
well, and what's weird, though, is, like, take those two movies, The Thing and Little Shop of Horrors, right? Because we watched that one not too long ago with the kids. It's, they didn't try to change it fundamentally into something it wasn't.
Yeah.
They didn't try to bring out a new message. They took Little Shop of Horrors and they added Rick Moranis and Jim Henson to it. I mean, really, that's...
Yeah.
Jim Henson did the puppetry, and they just they updated what they could do with the special effects and brought in some really good actors. Same thing with The Thing. I mean, we can talk all day long about John Carpenter's genius and Kurt Russell and, you know, all... But really and truly, what they did was they took this existing film and they almost frame for frame just made it better. They didn't try to be like, oh, well, it's a global warming discussion. It's like, no, it's just it's just badass movie made more badass with modern technology.
Yeah.
And that's what they should do when they try to remake these movies, is don't try to reinvent it.
Yeah.
Like, it was popular for a reason.
Pay homage to it.
Exactly.
Right.
So,
Which you know, the remake of Black Christmas was a social SJW movie that was just unnecessary. It just ruined the formula. It was just, God. I watched it in a theater, and I was like, I'm glad I didn't pay for it.
Dude, I've heard too many people, like, get tongue-tied over not being able to properly describe how much it sucks.
It's horrible,
I don't have time to watch good movies.
There were so many what the fuck moments with that movie, man. It was just, it was bad.
Well,
December movies.
All right, well, let's take a break. We will be right back and have some new business.
5 years ago, Stephen King and George Romero, two masters of the macabre, created their hallmark of horror, Creepshow. Many would argue that nothing of significance has happened since. Until now. Thank you.
A coroner chief wouldn't have.
Maybe you don't get out much.
Oh, this is crazy. This is totally crazy.
Maybe you're always running late.
I gotta go.
Or maybe you just have other things on your mind.
They gotta make me a movie star.
But if you only make it to one scary film all year, make it one you remember all year long. Creepshow 2. If you like movies that will keep you stuck in your chair. Stephen King and George Romero have conjured up an all-new Creepshow. Just for you.
I mean, what is it?
I don't know.
So don't just sit there.
I'm gonna swim for it right now.
Walk. Run. Swim if you have to.
I got you!
But whatever you do, don't take your time. Because the scares come twice as quickly in...
I beat you!
Creepshow 2.
Alrighty. We are back.
New business is new business, and this is new business.
Okay, new business today is going to have a couple of new businesses. Then we're going to have a little discussion about some other stuff. But I just got a couple of cool stories that I thought you might enjoy. Did you hear about the guy that got banned from Yellowstone Park a while back? This is awesome, dude. What did he do?
Like, Yellowstone's huge. How do you get banned from the forest?
Dude, this is so awesome. This happened back in August to where, you know, there were still a lot of closures in national parks. You know, they were limiting capacity tremendously if allowing anybody in at all. This guy from Idaho Falls, Idaho. And the thing about it is, what I can see happening with this whole thing is this guy thought he was going to make a really, really cool Instagram video that was going to go viral, and it pretty much backfired to where he has a lifetime ban from Yellowstone Park. Think about that, dude. Okay, the guy has now been publicly named, which I'm happy about. That keeps him from getting any kind of notoriety. Has been banned from Yellowstone National Park for 2 years. Park rangers found him near Yellowstone's Shoshone Geyser Basin, one of the hot springs,
mm-hmm.
with cooking pots and 2 chickens in a burlap sack. He was trying to fry chickens at the hot spring using the heat from the water. Which they had to explain to him, you could die from these hot springs, just so you know.
Yeah.
These are really, really hot. It's not to be used in place of a range top to go ahead and try to fry chicken. But I thought that was absolutely hilarious,
man.
He pled guilty in court in September. He was fined $1,200. And he was also ordered to serve 2 years of unsupervised probation, during which time he's banned from the national park itself. Two others in the group the man had been traveling with were also cited by park rangers, but of course he was the one that got the biggest charge because he was actually in the process of trying to cook some chicken.
Were the chickens still alive?
But it doesn't say, but I'm thinking he had them in a burlap sack. I'm picturing him, you know, actually dressing them out there. There have been tourists that have been seriously injured and killed by hot springs at Yellowstone, which reach, of course, burning temperatures, as you know, and are sometimes highly acidic.
Yeah.
So it's not a good idea to go ahead and try to test the theory of, can I cook some chicken over at the hot springs, dude?
But see, like, even if you could, you wouldn't. Like, that's a dumb survival skill. It's like, if you need to cook a chicken, like, you're going to travel to where the hot springs
are. Yeah, exactly. You can't find hot springs everywhere you go.
Like, in a pinch, you can't find your matches. Just hike inland several miles to a hot spring.
Okay, one more, just another silly one. You know, I'm thinking it's been so long since we've done our Attack of Florida Man show. We actually could probably do a couple of our episodes with the stuff that has happened since then.
Yeah, so we need to.
I saw this article, and it just cracked me up when I saw it. Drunk Floridian busted for something. Okay, you'll love this. Right. His name is Paul Kijek, 50 years old, from St. Petersburg, Florida. I'll show you a picture of Paul. As you can see, older 50-year-old white gentleman, okay? He was at a bar 4:15 a.m. Sunday, pissed drunk. The patrons at the bar were refusing to let him drive himself. So the cops had to be called. The cops came out, didn't arrest him for public intoxication, which is pretty surprising, but they decided to get a taxi for him and put him in the taxi. So the taxi gets there. He begins yelling at the driver and punching the driver in the face as the car was pulling out. And then he jumped out of the car, began dancing in the street, screaming, "You white motherfuckers," and saying, "I'm Rick James, bitch." I just thought that was hilarious, dude. 6'3", 300-pound Kijik who lives less than 2 miles from the bar. He was 2 miles from home when he decided to lose his mind. He was arrested for battery and disorderly intoxication, both misdemeanors. He spent the night in jail and posted $600 bond. But I'm just picturing this giant white guy jumping out of a cab, cursing all the white motherfuckers around there and saying, "I'm Rick James, bitch."
That's awesome. So okay. I would tell you this, like, this is many, many years ago. I was working at an event in South by Southwest in Austin. So if you've never been to South by Southwest, it is like being at a rock concert, only it's the streets. Like, the city streets are just packed with people for as many blocks and whatever, right? So, but for those of you who are not from Texas, Texas bars have to close at 2. So 2 a.m., everything shuts down. The bars start closing out. People start going home. They're getting, you know, little trolley cabs and whatever. So I'm standing there waiting for my team. I had like 8 guys that I was working with and waiting for them to meet me at the street corner so we could all hike back to our hotel. And I'm standing there, and this kid who's about like 15 or 16 years old comes walking up, and he's got a Heineken in his hand. And there's a cop that's also just kind of watching things go on as he's... So it's me, this cop, and this kid. And this kid walks up, and the cop looks at him, just shakes his head, and is like, "Pour it out." Cop does not want to have to process anything. It's 2 in the morning. He's on crowd control. He's just like, "Kid, don't even." Like, kid looks at the cop, says, "Don't be a dick." Cop reaches up, pushes his button on his shoulders, like, "I need a wagon at X and Y streets," and like turns around, puts the cuffs. I'm just like, dude,
you could have went home.
You just watched this happen in slow motion, and I'm just like,
keeping it real, man. Got to keep it real.
Paddy wagon pulls up. They open the back doors. There's just like full of people just being drunk and disorderly. But yeah, sometimes you just... it's a slow telegraph. It's like, man, just don't say words. Just shh.
Alrighty. Let's talk a little bit about an event that we have coming up. You know, it's amazing the success of the last horror pop-up market put on by the Houston Horror Film Festival.
Mm-hmm.
Have you noticed how much it's caught on? Texas Frightmare Weekend's having one this month. There's one coming up in San Antonio. Just the success of this market and just, you know, the event that it became is fucking awesome, dude.
Yes.
We've heard reviews from people that have said one of the things they were most impressed about is how everyone felt very safe as far as the current times that we're in with the pandemic. Everybody wore masks, understood it was required. Everybody got temperature checks. People, for the most part, were able to maintain distance.
Mm-hmm.
Huge room, limited capacity. Absolutely great event. So good that the Horror Pop-Up Market Part 2 is coming up in January. January 16th, 2021, in the same place. Marriott Hobby in South Houston. From 12 p.m. to 8 p.m. this time. You're going to have some extended hours this time. It's going to be just another absolutely great event with a few horror icons that we're going to discuss right now.
Well, the thing was, man, that was what was so great about it was that... Well, first of all, dude, we had straight-up vendors that sold out.
Yeah.
not sold well, not did pretty good. We had an artist there, and he had not
Gomez, yes,
not inexpensive stuff. I mean, his reasonably priced, but
it was
not,
original artwork, huge paintings. Yeah, that I mean, displayed so well.
He had some massive pieces, and at some point, I was standing there, kind of working the door, kind of, you know, making sure vendors were okay. And he comes to test me. I'm like, "Hey, have you seen Tony?" And I was like, "Yeah, you know, what you need?" He's like, "Well, I'm out of stuff." I was like, "He's like, I sold everything, so I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing now." I'll find him for you.
Hold which on. Was really awesome with Drew is, you know, he was kind of a last minute addition, so he ended up in the foyer outside. Mm. He did incredibly well. He's a super nice guy. You can find him on Facebook. His artwork is great. He's working on some new projects and stuff. But when this part two came up, we're like, "Hey, move you in a big room this time." He's like, "No, I want to be in the exact same place I was in the last time, because that's my lucky spot now." And what's funny is most of the returning vendors have said, "I want to be in the exact same spot, because that is my lucky spot," because everybody did very, very well.
That's awesome.
Vendors were very selective. There was a waiting list to get involved with this show. It's going to be another great event. Once again, January 16th, tickets are still only $5, you know, in advance. It's going to be $10 at the door. It was amazing that we were able to, even with all the people that showed up, okay, because we had, you know, people all day. We never got over capacity in the main room. Mm-hmm. We were able to make sure we kept the flow going. As people would leave, more would arrive. It was just timed so well.
And that's one of those things where you hear the news and social media will have you think that everybody in the world is not wearing masks and it's a big Wild West and everybody's free for all. Not even the slightest. Everybody was extremely polite. People had built masks into their costumes. So, like, we had some Hannibal Lecters and some clowns and some Jasons and stuff that they had put their PPE gear into the mask so that it fit with the theme. But there was nobody that was given a hard time or giving a hard time about masks. So it was real.
And the celebrity guests that were there, they all had an absolute blast. I mean, Sandy Johnson, you know, we talked to her before and after. She loved the event. She loved the enthusiasm she was shown by the people of Houston. Felissa had an absolutely great time. I mean, everybody just had a wonderful time. So much so that, you know, it's getting around. People are calling, wanting to get involved with the show. You know, agents are calling, trying to get their guests booked for the show. But once again, we're going to be limited with capacity. We're keeping it small to the big event in June, of course, which is going to be the really big one, the real big test. So Houston Horror Market pop-up part two. First guest, Amelia Kincaid, of course. Everybody knows Amelia, Night of the Demons 1, 2, and 3, plus some other movies. But of course, she's best known from Angela from Night of the Demons. She's an excellent guest. She loves meeting fans. She's going to be there. Ari's coming down. Ari Lemon, the first Jason.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome guest. He loves his fans. He loves talking. Super nice guy.
Super nice guy. Yeah, that's one of those things. I met him a couple years ago at an event, and he takes the time. He asks questions. He actually does really seem to care about the fans. Like,
right.
It's not just like, "Oh, hey, how are you?" It's very much like, "Oh, hey, man, you know, what brings you out today?" You know, very personable,
right.
and friendly. So very, very good guest.
And he loves seeing the unique items that you bring for him to sign. Of course, he was the first Jason part one, came jumping out of the water. He was our first glimpse of the, you know, the icon that became Jason Voorhees. Added to it, Patty Mullen, which is just an awesome get. Frankenhooker herself is going to be at the show.
I have a feeling there's going to be a whole bunch of pictures with that, you know, sideways mouth.
Yes. Deborah Foreman from April Fool's Day, Valley Girl, Waxwork, My Chauffeur, real genius. She's just been in a ton of movies. She's going to be in attendance. Very beautiful. Very beautiful Deborah Foreman. We'll probably be doing an interview with her soon for the show also, which we're going to get as many as we can on the show. I think Patty Mullen will be able to get with her. And also, just a kid that creeped me out when I first saw him on the screen, Mr. Miko Hughes from the first Pet Sematary. Mm-hmm.
Gage Creed, bro.
He was just awesome. He's also the Girls Have a Vagina kid from Kindergarten Cop, of course. Yeah, Miko Hughes is going to be in the house.
He's a new nightmare.
He's a new nightmare. Like
it, but yep. He played Heather Langenkamp's kid.
Yes. Yep. Yep. So he's going to be in attendance, which is going to be great to meet him. And just, I'm sure he's got some great stories from some of the stuff that he's been involved in. So those are the guests we're going to be having. It's going to be a really, really great time. And once again, tickets in advance, $5. At the door, $10. I mean, you can't beat it for what you get.
I've already got my volunteer shirt, man. I'm ready.
Now, it is recommended that you purchase advanced tickets to make sure you're going to get in. Because once we get to the capacity of 250 advanced ticket sales are going to be shut down. And you'll only be able to get in at the door at that point, which is $10. We're going to keep the capacity limited. Once again, as I said, face masks are going to be expected the entire time. Hand sanitized sanitation stations will be available for the event. There's plenty of space to keep socially distant. I mean, it's a huge, huge room we're going to be in. And of course, vendors are limited too, which is one of the reasons why we have already sold out of vendor spots. And we got 32 vendors. Oh, sorry. We have 27 vendors right now. Some of the ones that are going to be returning, Ink of Geek, Ju Gomez, which we just talked about with his original artwork. Goth Yoga is coming back. So Creepy Designs, who we love, and Scary Dad. She's been a great supporter of everything we do. Great Scott Collectibles. Rebel Element's going to be coming back. Black Box Art is coming back, which is going to be just awesome. We were working on a different guest that we were going to do this with, but hopefully we'll be able to do some themed selfie opportunities with the Pamela Voorhees head on the tray that he brings out to the show, which is great art. Joe Denton ended up buying it.
Yeah.
he couldn't pass it up. Phoenix Rising Art, Crypt Kitty Designs, Obscure Houston's going to be back. Of course, DWN with Tom Martino and Fast Custom Shirts with Joe Garcia is going to be there. Andy's going to have a booth set up. So Gonzo Toys and Comics is going to be there. Frank and Plush, Misfit Toys has gone and said, give us two booths this time. That was too good of a show. Texas Devil Dust is going to be a new Shop 31. Randy's going to be in it on now. So he's going to have some great movies, albums, different horror collectibles, comic books, all kinds of cool stuff. Texas Devil Dust, which is a new vendor, is going to be coming out. Chelsea Prince, Vamptropolis, Phoenix Rising Art, Obscure Houston's coming back. I'm not sure if I said that.
Yeah, you mentioned them.
Halloween Night, the Horrorholic's going to be back in the house, of course. Designs for Delinquents, Disco Bloodbath is going to be back, which is awesome. Paul Bearer Press, Death Heads Press is going to be back also. Rogue Aromas, it's just going to be a really, really great show.
So. Sweet, dude. It was a blast last time.
Oh, yeah. It's horror community. You know how everybody gets along. Everybody loves the same thing. Everybody has an appreciation for the same things. It's a great event, man.
That's awesome, dude.
So try not to miss it. Come on out. See Tony and Troy put on another one of their wonderful shows. And, of course, the Scary Dad guys are going to be there helping out all that we can.
Yep. Awesome. Well, then we will take a break and come back and keep the show on the road.
This is a house where no one should live.
Woman lived here before you is nuts. Wouldn't be surprised if someone just got fed up and off her.
She was my aunt.
Heart of gold, though.
Roger Cobb has come here alone.
Daddy?
But no one is ever alone in the house.
This house knows everything about you. Leave while you can.
No!
It has been waiting for him.
Hi.
Sandy.
You. Horror has
has found a new home. House. Enter at your own risk.
Alrighty then. So, where would you like to start?
Dude, I'll let you kind of drive this one. They're just, you know, doing research on horror anthologies. Horror anthologies have been a popular method of presenting horror on film for a really, really long time. And some of the ones that I was researching that are incredibly highly rated when it comes to horror anthologies, I've never seen before.
Oh, really?
One of the ones that I found is one called Dead of Night from 1945. Horror anthology, one of the ones recommended as far as a segment, which I've actually heard people reference this segment before, is called Ventriloquist Dummy. So, you know, before we had, you know, all the haunted toys and dolls, in 1945, Dead of Night gave us the Ventriloquist Dummy, which is one of the ones that I want to look into and see, because it's one of the highest rated on IMDb as far as horror anthologies go.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I definitely want to see that. Another older one is 1972's Tales from the Crypt, mm-hmm. which is another one I want to see. And another one that I saw that's another one that's highly rated. I'm talking, what I'm telling you right now, IMDb's list of the top 53 horror anthologies. This is one and two I just mentioned. Three is from 1963 called Black Sabbath, which is another one. I want to start checking some of these out. I mean, the top five, well, top four, are the newest one is from 1964.
Wow.
And that's the top four rated horror anthologies they have.
I think we got some homework to do.
Yes.
Like revisit the subject. I mean, this is right at the beginning of the conversation. But I was just going to say, dude, like anthology type stuff, I mean, like Tales from the Dark Side, Tales from the Crypt, like, that was my bread and butter when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. You know, my parents didn't really so much, I mean, I say it now and I say I wasn't huge into horror. It wasn't that I wasn't huge into horror. It was like I wasn't real big into slashers when I was a kid. But like any kind of monster, you know, Jaws and Piranha or Grizzly or, you know, any of that kind of stuff. But then, dude, Tales from the Crypt and Tales from the Dark Side, like Tales from the Dark Side especially, I mean, just the opening scene. Just that the title sequence for Tales from the Dark Side was so frightening, you know.
Right.
Like I used to just, I mean, but I was just completely like hypnotized. Like,
yeah.
I must watch this. Those, you know, we mentioned Creepshow 2, you know,
Things for the Ride. Those came out at the time when I'm sure you just like me. You were coming into your own with your movie taste. You know, mm-hmm. there was that time in the early to mid 80s that every Friday night, me and my cousin Mark would ride our bikes over to Wagon Bag Video, pick movies out to rent, and that was our weekend. And those are the movies that just captured our attention.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny because horror works in short skits. You know,
yeah.
We talk about the difference between horror and comedy all the time and how they're kind of just joined at the hip. Because of the way the timing has to work. Like, mm-hmm. you have to time a scare properly or else you either lose it or it doesn't work. You know, like, it's like over-the-top gore but not scary or what. Like, if you don't craft it right, you lose the scare. But then you've got horror comedy stuff, again, sort of like Creepshow, where it's sinister humor, I mm-hmm. guess is the best way to say it, because it's...
dark humor.
It's full-on horror, but it's also kind of funny.
Right.
You know, thanks for the ride, lady. You know,
dude, like, honestly, I was going to wait till we talked about, you know, the different ones. And Creepshow 2, that's my favorite part. It, even to this day, you know, and of course these kids don't understand, but I'll bring one of my daughter's friends somewhere back home and they'll say, thanks for the ride. And I'll just chuckle. Right. You know, because I just remember that so well. That was such a great, and it was funny, but it was also scary as shit.
Oh, dude. Well, that was the thing, is because with the exception of the raft, like all of the stories in Creepshow 2 are kind of ironic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, thanks for the ride. Like, she didn't give him a ride. She smacked him with her car. So there was never a ride involved.
Right.
And he's just torturing the hell out of her. And it's kind of sinister, like I said, it's sinister humor that she's getting instant karma for a hit and run, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, but yeah, it's... I mean, it doesn't make it any less scary, but it just kind of makes you be like, ooh, that's just...
And same thing with Chief Woodenhead, you know? Yeah. Like, he just... Like, they kill the couple, and then he just...
He becomes Michael Myers made of wood.
And he just an Indian he just headdress. Steps off his post and just takes care of business.
Yeah.
But the concept's so out there, but it's like you couldn't make a whole movie about that.
Right.
But you can make it a very effective short.
Yeah.
Which is what they did, which is awesome. So, yeah, dude, the anthology series, the movies, the Twilight Zone.
Twilight Zone is one that I definitely want to talk about because that one, of course, that when did Twilight Zone come out? That was in late 80s. It was in, 1983.
Yeah.
And I remember the one that got me the most in that Twilight Zone series was the little boy that lived in the house with all the kidnapped people. That scared the shit out of me, man. Especially the rabbit that comes out of the hat that is just has murder in his eyes. That was a creepy-ass one, and it was so well done. The opening story with Dan Aykroyd and what's his name? I can't remember his name. Nemo's dad.
Brooks. Albert Brooks.
Albert Brooks. It is so effective.
You want to see something really scary?
Because you think they're being silly, they're having fun, and next thing you know, he just...
Vamps out.
Yeah. It is just awesome. Very well done movie.
Yeah. I remember the Twilight Zone. I remember, like... Was it John Lithgow? I blanked on his name on the plane redoing the William Shatner scene from the TV series.
Yes.
And you know, John Lithgow is such an awesome actor.
He's such a good actor, man.
But you know, he's so effective. And what's so great about it is that Third Rock.
I remember the show.
We watch that every now and then. That's one of our comfort foods. Like, because you can just put it on and it holds up, man. It is so hilarious. Like, the conversations and just the weird observational stuff from the perspective of the aliens. But there's a scene where he gets on a plane. He's a space alien. You know? he's flown through the galaxy. So he's not afraid of avionics. But he gets on the plane... And he like recreates that scene in the show that he played, you know, 20 years ago. It's such an effective scene that he can do a callback in a completely other series playing a different character, and you're like, oh,
everybody remembers it. It just stands out,
you know. Definitely. So yeah, I love short horror. I love the little bite sized horror. And what's so cool about it too is if something doesn't get you, then just wait, because something will,
right?
Like in the next scene. I gotta remember the one called there's a series called Dark Room in 1981, so I'd have been 5 years old, and the host was James Coburn of all people, right? And it was just a horror anthology series. And those were very popular in like the late 70s, early 80s, mm-hmm. you know. It was going into, again, Creepshow and Creepshow 2 and House and like everything. Like the 80s were just going to be coming, a wave of horror coming up. But there was an episode of this show. My dad used to watch it all the time. And it was called Catnip. And it made me scared of everything forever. I mean, it was just horrifying. And so basically what the story is there's this dude who moves in next door to this lady who's got a cat. And she doesn't like him, so she harasses him. And the dude's just trying to get by. But the cat's always like sneaking into his house and messing around. And finally he discovers that, you know, he thinks she's a witch. And she's using the cat to spy on him. So he's kind of starting to lose his mind a little bit. So he ends up setting a trap for the cat. And he accidentally kills her. He kills the old lady. But then the cat just goes on a rampage and it's just like this cat is everywhere. Right? And finally, so he's chasing the cat around with a shovel and he's trying to kill the cat. You know, he's already killed the old lady. He's trying to kill the cat. Mm-hmm. And cat, you know, he takes a swing at it, cat runs down under the bed, the dude looks under the bed. The lady's head is under there. detached.
Oh, shit.
Under the bed and just doing like... And this is like on primetime TV, and I'm 5 years old, and it just... I would not look under a bed. I wouldn't look at a cat. Old ladies scared the hell out of me. <It's> like,
Those movies can be effective, man.
It was great.
Those movies were very, very effective. And you know, you're talking about how popularity in the 70s and 80s. One of the things that helped a lot that I think is just the popularity of Stephen King. Stephen King has enough short stories where you can make a million movies.
Mm-hmm.
You can make a million horror anthologies. He just has so, and they're all so effective. And I think that, you know, once the formula was set up with horror anthologies where you had an overarching story, then you had the little vignettes in between that kind of all brought everything together. And just with the popularity of Stephen King, it just blew up, man. And you've got the method and setup has been mastered. So now it's just, and it, and you have so many independent filmmakers now that make short horror films that you can fill anthologies up with some good quality stories, man. It's a great method of bringing it out there.
And I think too, like the internet's opened up a lot, you know, streaming services and YouTube and stuff. It's opened up a lot of that stuff because it used to be, and it's a complaint that I have with a lot of Netflix series, like the Daredevil, for example, is that, you know, whenever you're working for a studio and they're making a show, it's like maybe you have 20 minutes worth of story and they order 50 minutes worth of show. And so then you have a lot of pensive looks outside, you know, a lot of very slow monologues. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, dude, come on. You know, it's like we all got lives to live. Let's just pack that 20 minutes, make it all killer, no filler, and let's roll on.
Right. You know?
And with a lot of these anthology series, it's like that. You can watch it in bites. You can sit there and watch the whole movie, you know. And so I love that kind of stuff where it's like you can listen, you know. You can sit down and watch, you know, a 20-minute, little 10-minute clip and then go about your day and you've got, you know, full-size horror in there.
Right.
So.
Yeah, it's just so effective. And, you remember so much about these. You always have your favorite parts of all these anthologies. And a lot of times it has to do with that overarching story, that person that's bringing the stories to you. And an incredible example of that is Trick or Treat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody knows who Sam is. People who haven't seen Trick or Treat know who the hell Sam is. And it was just an incredibly effective way to put together a horror anthology.
Yeah. And that's one of those great things about Dougherty, too, is when at the time he made it, nobody was really making anthology films. And so he went and made one, and then it just turned into, like, the Halloween movie now.
Right.
And that's, again, the overarching story with Sam throughout the, you know, throughout the thing, but just the different, I mean... Dude, those kids in the bus, that is one of the saddest, but at the same time, scariest sort of, like, when they start creeping out of the mud.
Yeah. Another good one that does a good job with that is another Stephen King one is Cat's Eye, which as a kid, that was one of those shows that was played on a loop on cable channels. So I watched Cat's Eye a million times, and it just kind of, it's one of those movies where it's not the best horror anthology in the world. You know, it's kind of campy. It's kind of, you know, the end, you know, where the... You know, Drew Barrymore gets saved by the hero cat, and to me, the music that they used in it at the end, it just kind of it tried to turn it into E.T. It was just a weird effect that it had, and it was doing so good for the movie itself. My favorite is the smoking cessation program with what's his name, James Woods. That's a cool ass story. I mean, it had me looking in closets for, you know, boots that might be in there that I didn't recognize before. It's an effective movie, but you remember that overarching story so well. Mm-hmm. They kind of screwed the movie up at the end.
But see, but it's a good movie. I would almost disagree because you're describing scenes like when you mentioned Cat's Eye, and I, like you say, it was on constant rotation. But those other scenes, to me, get lost in other anthologies. Because you could have just as easily told me that James Woods was in House, and I would have believed you, because that was another one that was on constant rotation, anthologies, you know, movies. House or House 2, right? But what I remember about Cat's Eye is that little jester monster.
Oh, yeah.
That you know, is
trying, it's a creepy little thing.
It's creeping out and hiding in the walls. I mean, cheesy or what have you. It's effective because it stayed in my mind. And, you know, it's that immediate, you know, you say Cat's Eye, I think that little jester guy.
Yeah.
Kind of like Poltergeist and the Clown. It just, it's an effective part.
That sticks in your mind and just stays there. And that was a cool little character, you know. And the movie was good. It just, like, for some reason, just that end when it started, it just seemed to start getting never-ending story. Like, it was just, it was odd the way that it ended. Especially after watching Creepshow and Creepshow 2. There's no happiness there. You know? There isn't any. You know, there's no uplifting music in that movie.
True.
It's a dark movie. But it was still effective.
It's pretty cool to see Leslie Nielsen go underwater, though. Yeah. That was a happy ending to me.
Another great, in my opinion, incredibly underrated actor that could, you know, he could do comedy, he could be serious. He, of course, is mostly known for his comedy because that's what he mostly did. But
he was a very serious actor in Total War.
Yeah.
But
everybody remembers Naked Gun. You know?
Oh, yeah.
But he was, an Airplane. But yeah, he could do a serious character really, really well. Just like John Lithgow. John Lithgow plays an incredible psychopath.
Dude, yeah.
That dude is just, his acting chops are just, wow. I mean, he's just great. And once again, bringing up just Trilogy of Terror is another one. That 1975, it's pretty much, as of right now, I got homework assignments, of course. It's probably the oldest anthology that I remember, that I enjoy like a tremendous amount. And I would almost say it spawned the birth of the haunted toy, but I got this one from 1940 something that I need to go check out now that apparently is pretty damn good too.
Well, and that spawned the, I mean, it didn't spawn, I mean, long before Toy Story, like in Small Soldiers and stuff, I think every kid that's ever had dolls or action figures will ever, like, imagine they move around when they're not around, because you infuse them with personality.
Yeah.
And especially if there's a cartoon that goes with them, like, you can almost see them move on their own if you have a strong enough imagination. So it only makes sense that whenever you leave, they would move around and live a life. And, you know, it's kind of like you're calling cut on a movie set and they're like, get to go have a smoke or something. But Trilogy of Terror with that little doll, I mean, that's what happens when... you know, the exact same magic, only Andy's mom doesn't have Andy. She lives in an apartment.
Another one that I always have to bring up, just because, in my opinion, it was a pretty groundbreaking movie. And, you know, Rusty Cundiff. Are you familiar with the name? But Rusty Cundiff had been introduced to me with a movie called Fear of a Black Hat, which I recommend to people all the time. We used to watch it in college. It's essentially the rap version of Spinal Tap. And I know a lot of people say, that's CB4. No, Fear of a Black Hat is an organic documentary-based movie that is the rap version of Spinal Tap. And then Rusty Cundiff decides to blow us all away with Tales from the Hood in 1995, which is just a great, great film, man. The sequels, avoid them. Not so much. Yeah, avoid them. But the original Tales from the Hood was just a great, great movie that, you know, I can see where Jordan Peele probably got inspiration from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just showing that a black comedian, because comedy merges so well with horror, can just go right along and transition to that type of genre and make it a good movie.
Well, too, and I think because Rob Zombie said that he liked to use comedians, it's like... The cast of, like, all of the people in Devil's Rejects, pretty much, that are in that hotel, they're all comedians.
Mm-hmm.
They're known for being rather genteel. Like, they're not naughty comedians. They're pretty family-friendly comedians. And so, because Rob Zombie was like, yeah, whenever you see these likable people getting, you know, going through horror or becoming bad guys or whatever, like, it's... scarier.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, I mean, that's a formula that works. But yeah, and anytime you have a comedic actor in a horror role, it's almost always more effective somehow. It's
right. Another one that actually I want to see if you're familiar with these, because you know it's sad. I see these movies all the time, but I've never actually watched them. But VHS 1 and 2.
I've seen both of those, and they are both awesome. I haven't seen the third one, but the third one really kind of went away from what the originals were doing. Mm-hmm. And so, but VHS 1 and 2 are amazing. So, like, multiple directors. So, you don't have the same style running through the whole thing.
And that's always fun. I've seen several anthologies set up like that.
And so, what VHS 1 and 2, what the story is basically they're snuff films. They're like Faces of Death, kind of. And so, there's these people that are collectors of these videos of people dying in certain ways. And so all of it's like a found footage, like maybe a track. You know, this is not in VHS or VHS 2 specifically, but it might be like a cop's body cam is the perspective, and you're seeing things happen, and maybe the cop isn't the one that dies, but you're seeing, you know, like you're seeing somebody get shot through his body cam. And then it ends up on this underground black market of tape traders, mm-hmm. and people are trading these scenes, and so yeah, it's awesome, dude. Like it's really cool. I mean, it feels real too. Like right. It doesn't feel like it's like Blair Witch before Blair Witch blew up. Whenever mm-hmm. you weren't quite sure if like maybe you are actually watching something, you know it's produced, but it doesn't feel like it is. So it's for found footage and for what it is, it's pretty awesome, especially for maybe those of us who grew up with Faces of Death, that, you know, Faces of Death was for the most part a rumor. Like you heard about it, but you never actually saw it. You always heard about somebody that you knew whose cousin's older brother
had a copy,
but then you're always so many degrees separated from that person that actually had a copy. I grew up about half not believing it was real until I was grown, and then, you know, I actually saw them and I was like, oh wow, it was. You know what I mean? Like, but that's how this VHS actually plays. Mm-hmm. It's like, so it's cool.
See, with Faces of Death, and it's sad. I've mentioned Wagon Bag Video already with me and my cousin Mark riding our bikes together. They had them. And because my mom had already told them, look, he can handle these movies, let him rent them. We used to rent these motherfuckers, dude, and watch them. And I was, you know, 10, 11 years old watching Faces of Death, and so that's why I still I haven't watched them again. You know, I picked up 1 through 5. I have the VHS copies now, but I haven't even broken them out yet. Because honestly, I don't. My son might not be able to handle that shit. It's weird. He's gotten kind of squeamish lately. And I know I grew up more of a wrestling fan than you did when you were young. The Dark Side of the Ring. On Hulu right now, mm-hmm. which is a bunch of documentaries just about really fucked up shit that happened in wrestling. And there's a New Jack, I love this guy so much. You should follow him on Facebook and Twitter. I would recommend it. Dude is a psychopath. I mean, he was crazy. He almost killed a couple of people. And one of the ones is he just didn't give a shit. He'll tell you he was high on cocaine the entire time he was wrestling, and he would just do crazy shit. And there's a scene, it was called the Mass Transit Incident. You can look it up on Wikipedia. It's just this big ordeal where this 17-year-old kid lied about his age, showed up at one of their events, was supposed to do some midget wrestling, and one of the wrestlers didn't show up. And he said, hey, I'm 21, I'll do it, let me do it. So they put him in a ring, this 17-year-old kid who, you know, maybe wrestled 3 shows in his life. They put him in the ring with one of the craziest, most dangerous motherfuckers there is. And apparently before the match, he pissed off New Jack. So New Jack got in the ring and he just took a scalpel and he cut this kid's. He said at first he wasn't able to cut it, so he just dug in and apparently hit one of these kids' veins, killed some nerves. Half the kid's face didn't work anymore, and this kid is just laying on the mat, just blood is pouring out because he hit a vein that he shouldn't have hit, and he's still stomping on the kid and kicking. He almost went to jail behind that shit.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, so I was watching it with Noah. And he saw where New Jack started cutting the guy's head, and he just got up and he walked away. Oh, man. So yeah, I haven't broken out the Faces of Death yet because I know he probably wouldn't want to see that kind of shit. But just as a kid, it's weird how
It's fascinating.
Yeah.
I used to read those books about sharks, and like there'd always be like some centerfold section that had like ripped out guts.
A bite, with everything hanging out. It was just like fascinating.
You know, it's just, but you couldn't look away, especially, I mean, it's there, but, you know.
What was that in the early days of the internet, that website that used to just show all like the crime scene photos and it would show pictures of death and everything?
It
made you feel as though you were doing something you shouldn't have been doing, you know? It was like the dark web at that time.
Yeah, it was bad. What was that called? I remember that.
They used to show some horrible things on there, too, man. That was back in 96, 97 when that website
was. Yeah, it was. I mean, it was.
But it's basically, it's faces of death on the internet is what it was.
Did you ever see mydeathspace.com?
No.
My death space was like if somebody was on MySpace and they died. So if they had a MySpace profile and they died, then they would set it up on my death space.
That's morbid as hell. Dude.
Yeah. And it was, you know how like Reddit or 4chan, it's like just full of internet trolls.
Yeah.
Just like, so I saw it, was like, it was one of those things, it was like, oh my God, don't go here because it's so bad. So of course I'm going to like click on it and go there. But it's like my death space, and so it's got this picture of some kid that got run over by a car or something. Like it's their profile, with like a bar across it that would be like, you know, Johnny got hit by a car and died on October 3rd of this year, you know, and then like the comments would be like, you know, rhyming about getting hit by cars, and it's like, oh man, this reminds me of Stand By Me, and like just brutal. And I'm just like, oh my God, like if I was somebody's parents and I saw this, like I would, but what can you do? It's the internet, you know?
Right.
But it was morbid as hell. I mean, you'd go down this long,
that rabbit hole. It's hard to get out of it.
It's bad. So yeah, I don't know if there's a comparable one. Facebook just won't let you delete profiles, whether you're alive or dead.
Right.
Like you need a.
You gotta have somebody take it over and make a memorial for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, they own your stuff forever. But yeah, those are just some of the horror anthologies I highly recommend people check out. The horror anthologies are so much fun, and there's tons of independent ones too that I probably haven't brought up. There's the one that we saw, which the Christmas one that came out on Netflix a few years ago.
The Christmas Horror Story.
Yes, where at the end it ended up being.
Yeah.
Zombie elves, basically. Yeah. That's an effective one.
That was surprisingly good.
Yeah.
I remember
yeah.
because there's so much crap out there. And the fact that there is well-produced crap, and then there's also well-produced not crap, or like not well-produced good stuff, it's hard navigating, you know, because everybody's got their opinions. But that one was awesome.
It was very good. I enjoyed it a lot.
It was, I mean...
Because they had the Krampus one in it. And it was just, it was all Christmas themed, but it was very well done. I wasn't expecting it to be as good as it was.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. And so, yeah, I think it's probably still on Netflix.
I'm sure.
It's a Christmas Horror Story, I think it's what it's called. But yeah, that's a good one.
And Shudder's been putting out some great anthologies also. If you can get on Shudder, it's a fun way to, you know, immerse yourself in a little bit of horror for a little while, and some very effective shorts. You know, you don't get bored with horror anthologies normally.
Yeah,
you're gonna have your favorite, but normally all of them are gonna go ahead and get you where you want to be,
like The Raft.
Yeah,
between Creepshow and Creepshow 2, The Raft for me is the one that's like the most effective, the scariest, and who would have ever thought just a ball of tar floating on the water could be so frightening?
But. And I'll tell you, you know, reading the story and watching the episode, they did a perfect job in reenacting that story, bringing that story to life. It's very, very well done.
Rock and roll, man. Well, let's kick this one out, and we will see you next week.
Keep it scary.